thank you. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Cobb. Hi, Joe. Hi, Stephanie. Joe, did you know the link that... Hi there. Please pardon me. Joe, did you know the link in the room? It does have audio regarding Obama on his Islamic State resolution.
Do me a favor and post it again right quick because I had to
absolutely
reopen
it.
Well, no, I had to reopen.
Joe, did you know the link in the room?
It
does have audio.
Because we're speaking on InSpeaker right now.
Okay.
Yeah, Pals, I got one of its moods. So. If you're having problems, if you're in a virtual auditorium and you're having problems, you can pick us up on Ustream, Livestream, or any of the other streams, or you can hop on InSpeak and catch us there as well. For some reason or another, Pal Talk just gets flaky late in the evenings. I guess it gets tired. It's an old program. It's been around a decade or so now, so what can you expect? All right, let's see. Let's go ahead and queue this up right quick.
Today, my administration submitted a draft resolution to Congress to authorize the use of force against ISIS. I want to be very clear about what it does and what it does not do. This resolution reflects our core objective to destroy ISIL. It supports the comprehensive strategy that we've been pursuing with our allies and our partners. A systemic and sustained campaign of airstrikes against ISIL in Iraq and Syria. Support and training for local forces on the ground, including the moderate Syrian opposition, preventing ISIL attacks in the region and beyond, including by foreign terrorist fighters who try to threaten our countries, regional and international support for an inclusive Iraqi government that unites the Iraqi people and strengthens Iraqi forces against ISIL, humanitarian assistance for the innocent civilians of Iraq and Syria who are suffering so terribly under ISIL's reign of horror. The resolution we've submitted today does not call for the deployment of U.S. ground combat forces to Iraq or Syria. It is not the authorization of another ground war, like Afghanistan or Iraq. The 2,600 American troops in Iraq today largely serve on bases. And yes, they face the risks that come with service in any dangerous environment, but they do not have a combat mission. They are focused on training Iraqi forces, including Kurdish forces. As I've said before, I'm convinced that the United States should not get dragged back into another prolonged ground war in the Middle East.
But others, namely the Republicans, think the powers requested in this resolution should be more extensive.
Well, they want them to be more extensive in case they want to start a ground war. I'm not really into this ground war thing at the moment, so look, let's bomb them. And if they want to be a ground war, let the Islamists take the ground war. We don't need to be fighting a ground war. This, ISIL is not America's fight. We can help our allies and support our friends in the Middle East, but it shouldn't be our fight. Their people should be doing this fight. This should
be Joe,
Muslims curtailing the Muslims, not us, huh?
Hey, Joe, I don't think the U.S. can afford another ground war.
We could, but why bother if we're going to pull out like we always do? We have a bad habit of ejaculating early over there. We just never seem to see anything through. So if we're not going to, why bother? That seems like a waste of time.
The price probably tripled now compared to...
Yeah, we never got reimbursed for the last two wars. I mean, we were supposed to be getting free oil from Iraq and all kinds of low side benefits. We ain't seeing any of that, and I don't think we're ever going to. So I'm going back to this. Firm stance. We need to be able to... I don't think we should get involved in any more countries anymore unless we're going to make them states. or commonwealths.
What the VFW up here said in American Legion, they had a big meeting all over the place, and they said, we're tired of playing games. Go in there and kick butt, get it over with. That's it. End of story. All these veterans are saying the same thing up there.
Oh, yeah. That's McCain's big thing. He got on TV and was ranting and raving about it. Look, we don't want to give you these war power acts because we don't know the Vietnam going on here. And that's what he just said. Well, we're bombing them. This is what we did in Vietnam. We bombed them, and we sent in people to train them. And the first – we sent in about 2,000 into Vietnam, and then it was 5,000, it was 10,000, and all of a sudden it was 30,000. The next thing you knew, it was 60,000. Next thing we knew, we had 63,000 dead soldiers over there. And God knows how many locked up in prison or war camps. So we supposedly learned the lesson. Well, let's act like we actually learned that lesson. And, you know,
yeah, we never learned anything.
Well, I don't want to repeat it. I mean, I know anybody who lived through Vietnam, and anybody whose kids or grandkids or people who lived through Vietnam don't want to repeat it.
I was there. So, you know, when you first got there, you're all gung-ho. But guess what happens? 3 months into it, then you're saying to yourself, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah.
Because you can't hit this target, but you're allowed to hit this target. It didn't make sense.
And at three months in, you know, you were an old timer.
yeah, you were a veteran at the second day of being coming around.
Because what was it? It was it was something like a 65% or 75% chance you'd be killed within the first 24 hours you went in the combat.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was crazy. But in World War II, it was actually worse than that. It was, but, you know, in most wars, like anything else, if you survive the first couple of days, you're usually going to make it a longer term. But it shows you how many of these kids get used as cannon fodder. You know, that's really all they are because they're dying first day out or second day out. I mean, they're basically just filler.
You know what? When I landed in Vietnam the first day, we got mortared attack. We had to find cover in the middle of a tarmac. Where are you going to find cover at? And you can't hide in a plane.
Oh, hell no, because that's a target. And you're right, they're not on a tarmac to hide behind. And usually if it's something you can hide behind, it's probably explosive anyway. So, fuel, weapons, you know, nothing you want to be hiding behind.
That's right.
It's a shame all of that goes on over there. And, you know, but hell, maybe our country will get safe one day. The world will be a safe place.
Yeah.
And there won't be
someday.
A need for guns. Or nuclear weapons, or anything along those lines. Long live Putin! Crazy bastard.
I don't think
that
it's Putin you got to worry about.
Patrice, where is she?
Yeah, where's Patrice at?
Well, you know, it's funny. Referencing that fact that a war would be a tremendous a concern, of course, people do want to stop ISIS. But now, here are three interesting quotes. One is, and I'm citing directly Representative Mo Brooks, Republican of Alabama, if the president wants to engage in a half-hearted PR effort to go through the motions to give the appearance that we're fighting when we're not doing what is necessary to win, said Representative Mo Brooks, Republican of Alabama, then we should not engage, end quote. And this was from that article that I just referenced. And there are two other interesting quotes in this article. First is, I don't feel this is a constraining document as written, that meaning the resolution. Representative Adam B. Schiff of California, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, told reporters, it's, I think, quite carte blanche in terms of geography, types of forces, et cetera, and therefore I think we're going to have a lot of work on that, end quote. And then the last quote from this article, and I'll go for Joe's again, the last quote, pardon me, what they're saying is some ground operations are okay, some boots on the ground are okay, some offensive is okay, some combat is okay, and it could even go on for a bit, said John Bellinger, the top State Department lawyer under the younger Mr. Bush. But they don't want Afghanistan. They don't want Iraq. They don't want occupation. They don't want an invasion, end quote. And again, this is from the article by Peter Baker, Obama on his Islamic State resolution. And it was a great article. Oh, I'm sorry, the article's title itself is, pardon me, the article's specific title is Obama's Dual View of War Power Seeks Limits and Leeway.
I know he wants a lot more room than they want to give him. And he wants to have the thing, but look, I'm with these guys. No big troops on the ground. We don't need to get involved in this war. Let them fight it. I mean, if they start killing Americans, then it's different, but But then again, after that little clip we played about that little American girl earlier today, I want to bomb their asses back into the Stone Age. I think we should shove a tactical nuke up ISIL's ass, but, you know, I might be getting a little carried away.
Why don't they use the daisy cut, the daisy cutter?
I don't know. They use them in some places, but they could be using Hades bombs out there for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I didn't understand. When they burned that guy alive, Jordan and America should have loaded up about 40 planes full of Hades bombs and showed them what burning alive is really like. Or even like in the old days, you ever heard the phrase, napalm sticks to kids? Well, that's a true statement. Sometimes you got to fight fire with fire.
That's true.
And these guys say, look, you want to burn somebody? We'll burn your whole freaking village down. What the hell are you talking about here?
I did that in Nam. I burned down a village. I didn't care. I really didn't really care.
Yeah,
my boys.
It really bothers me, the whole burning alive thing.
Yeah, well,
but
sucks.
Lord have mercy.
That's good. But did you send me a title to Paranormal? But it sucks. I mean, you know, bottom line is it's got to stop. We can't keep allowing this kind of stuff to go on our planet. And we, the people of Earth, need to be the ones that stands up and stops it.
I don't like is the damn rules of engagement. They keep on changing it. They change it. You don't shoot here, but you can't do this. But go over there and shoot over here. No. Don't. You want to keep alive, you make your own rules up and stay alive, and then just take out whatever you have to take out. Is there any way you're going to stay alive in a combat zone? You know, the hell with these rule engagements.
There's a lot of truth to that. I mean, a lot of times it is, kill or be killed when you're out there. But as a nation, we've got to get better. We can't keep allowing this kind of behavior to go on endlessly unchecked. And we promote as much bad behavior as the rest of the world does. That's what's really sad about all of this. But anyway, I need to shut up so Trees can say something.
Yeah.
This is an interesting executive order. Regarding the fight against cyber terrorism. It's from fortune.com. It was posted February 13th by Mikhail Levron. And, you know, this particular executive order could represent a pragmatic approach in efforts to combat cyber terrorism, cooperation between corporations and the government as an effective strategy, as well as Obama's intent to call for passage of bill are covered in this article, again February 13th, entitled President Obama Unveils Cybersecurity Push in Tech Industry's Backyard, again by Mikhail Levron. And I'm just going to quote directly here. The president signed an executive order to encourage more sharing of information between companies about hacker attacks. Now, end quote. This was at the president's appearance at a summit held at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Also present at this particular summit were the secretaries of Homeland Security, Secretary of the Department of Commerce, and the CEOs of Apple, American Express, AIG, Kaiser Permanente, Pacific Gas and Electric, also others. And let me see here. Now, quoting the president, government cannot do this alone, the president told the audience. The fact is that the private sector can't do this alone either. It's government that often has the latest information on these new threats. And regarding the specifics, quoting, President Obama also used the opportunity to sign a new executive order that encourages U.S. companies to partner both with each other and with government agencies. The order lays out a framework for expanded information sharing designed to help companies work together and work with the federal government to quickly identify and protect against cyber threats. Already security vendors like Palo Alto Networks, Fortinet and Symantec have banded together to form the Cyber Threat Alliance to share threat intelligence, end quote. And just something else about legislation. The article also mentions that the president right now is pushing our Congress to pass a more comprehensive bill regarding cybersecurity. So interesting development, a positive one. What do you think? I think it is.
Moving in the right direction anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully something good comes out of all of this. I don't know. Sometimes I feel optimistic towards what's going on in the planet. Sometimes I'm like, really, really? What kind of crack are you people smoking out there? It's a hard one. I mean, it's a hard decision for a lot of people out there to wonder about their daily lives, how things are going to go. Is there really, do we have to go back to worrying about being nuked again? Do we have to worry about terrorism? You know, Americans just like to go through their daily lives not thinking about much of nothing. But unfortunately, other parts of the world don't want to allow us to do that. They seem to feel the need to, I don't know, get involved in our lives. That's how it's at. What do you think? Okay, that sounds good. A few more photos. Yeah, okay. That was kind of strange. I love our government, and I hate them in the same breath. No, I don't actually ever hate them, but they do get on my nerves from time to time. And I miss the good old days when you could trust your government implicitly. How's that? Which I don't think you can do that anymore. You think? What do you think, Kyle? Do you think you could trust your government implicitly?
Nope. Not at all. Not with Obama in there, anyway.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. He kind of just worries me in general. Makes me wonder, like, oh, okay, well, we live you a long time, but are we going to live you a long time? Hmm.
It makes me
nervous. But
he's trying to pass a law, free college for kids. Well, who's going to pay for it? Your taxpayers.
Yeah, you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, no, you know, that ain't going to work with the Republicans.
I sent him a letter saying, you make sure Bud pays for this. So tell him to sell off some lobsters, and he can pay for his, paid his bill off. Now, Obama thought that was a good idea, by the way. It's crazy.
Only in the USA things happen like this.
Yes, it is. What you got for us, Ms. Trees?
Well, you know, let's turn to a favorite topic of mine, a new topic of mine, and that is the accomplishments of Governor Bobby Jindal in Louisiana. But the first one, you know, I so appreciated his wit here, is Governor Jindal's response to President Obama's prayer request comments. Now, I'm quoting from the newmax.com website. I was trying to get the audio on this, so I'll try to speak as clearly as I can. The article by John Blosser, posted Friday, February 6th, is entitled, Bobby Jindal to Obama, Medieval Christian Threat is Under Control. Let's see, Louisiana, according directly, Louisiana's Republican Governor Bobby Jindal has slammed President Barack Obama's squishy response to Muslim extremists after Obama equated Christians in the Crusades to the Islamic State or ISIS at the National Prayer Breakfast on Thursday. Mm. I quoted the president directly last week, and I'll tell you, Governor Jindal, let me see. And my first two favorite quotes are here. Jindal said, our nation and free people everywhere who believe in basic human rights have too much at stake to bite our lips. We must speak honestly and act bravely to reach the day when radical Islam no longer threatens our nation, our allies, and our shared values, the Washington Times reported. Let me see. Oh, here's the article. I'm sorry, here's the quote. We will be happy to keep an eye out for runaway Christians, but it would be nice if he would face the reality of the situation today. The medieval Christian threat is under control, Mr. President. Please deal with the radical Islamic threat today, end quote.
I have to agree with anyone on that. I mean, it does seem like the Christians might be a little in control, but that goes back to proving our point about you got to fleece your own religion. And the Christians somewhat do a good job of that. At least they don't let them kill us anymore. So I guess they're doing better. You know, molesting and raping, they might still get a little of that going on. But other than that, they seem to be under control. The Islam needs to be brought under control. It needs to be brought under control by its own people. That way it'll be, you know, it'll be less, I guess, collateral damage is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you know, those are great comments, guys. What's interesting as well, Jindal references here Hillary Clinton. Here quoting, Hillary Clinton shares the blame for this predicament and would make it worse. She said we need to show respect for our enemies and empathize with their perspective and point of view, Jindal wrote. You know, this makes sense. And I think that particular quote was in his New York Times op-ed piece. I wish I had a chance to read that. I was trying to find that online, and I'm not subscribed at the Times. Maybe I should be.
You know, I had seen one piece on him that I had played the other day. Jindal's crazy guy. I mean, he's got a lot of good points to him, and he's made some good deals down here. And, I mean, the liberals hate him, so. Anytime, it's one thing you can judge a good Republican by is if the liberals come out hardcore against him, you know he's doing a good job. But he's got a long ways to go. I know he's got higher political ambitions, but president, I don't think he'd make a good president. He might make a good VP, because he does kind of have a fiery self about him, but I don't think he has the political skill yet to be president. The only one really that I right now that I say that's in the Republican field that has the skill level it would take to run this country is Jeb. Jeb, you know, Florida's a big state. It's got more people than New York does. It's an important state. It's a tourist state. It's a port state. It's a food state. And he's well-liked there. And so he really understands bipartisanship, much more so than his dad or his brother did. He also is married to he's biracially married. So if you took a ticket like him and Ted Cruz, I think he'd win with a landslide. I don't think there'd be a chance. But, you know, or he could take a Jindal even, and that would pull in. That's also another minority that would help him pull in. But Jindal, I like Jindal, just not as president. Governor, okay. President, not so much. Jindal, I don't know if you're listening. Yeah, Jindal, if you're listening, well, dude, I love you, but not president yet. Maybe VP. Maybe 4 years as VP, or maybe 8 years as VP, then president, you know, something like that, if y'all do a good job, you know. That sounds good to me.
Well, you know, John, this next one relates to Jeb Bush, really Jeb Bush's staff, I believe. It's from Fortune.com, and it's under their tech cyber security, and it's entitled, the article is entitled, Jeb Bush Exposed, they should say Jeb Bush's staff. Exposed 13,000 Social Security numbers. Here's where they were hiding, by Robert Hackett, posted February 13th. And it concerns a motivation to be fully transparent, the releasing of many emails by Jeb Bush's staff. But unfortunately, I better cite directly on this.
No, I've seen that.
Had hidden Excel columns, and just quoting directly, with transparency in mind, the former Florida governor released his email correspondence from his term in office, with it personally identifiable information of his constituents. Earlier this week, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush released online a cache of emails sent and received by his personal email address during his time in office. His attempt at transparency turned sour after it was realized that some emails contained personally identifiable information of Floridians, including Social Security numbers, names, and dates of birth. Let me see. Todd Feynman, CEO of Data Protection, that's with the firm Identity Finder, is reviewing this information. And the article notes that when Feynman and his team first inspected the heavily flagged email, they were unable to locate the data. Initially suspecting it might have been a bug in the code, they had just released a new version of their software. They eventually determined that the information was contained in so-called hidden Excel columns obscured from view. Bush's email address, along with about 50 others, including AOL.com and Hotmail.com addresses, had been copied on that email. The spreadsheet in question, as the AP reports, concerned tracking the number of people on a state family service waiting list. The relevant slide is titled Developmental Disabilities Home and Community-Based Waiver Waitlist Data. End quote. Well, I hope this isn't going to hurt his campaign. It certainly is going to be a source of a major ire by the individuals whose privacy is impacted. It wasn't intentional.
No, it wasn't intentional. And I don't think it'll kill him. Won't help him any, but it won't kill him. That's more of a problem for his staff than him. I mean, he didn't personally release the mail, so. It's going to be more of an issue with his staff. But still, it's not something you want to, you know, be doing when you're thinking about running for president. no level of incompetence is a good thing, you know. Not if you want to be running the top dog show. You can't be making mistakes like that. So hopefully, you know, somebody will come up and figure it out, and maybe the his staff will work something out, and then they'll make a formal apology, and they'll go on from there. You know, hopefully they do the right thing. I got to give Jeb credit. He always seems like he wants to do the right thing. He doesn't seem like he has the need to hide stuff.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah, he seems much more calm about it than most other candidates. So I got to give him credit for that. What does it mean? Where it's going to go? I don't know, but I got to give him credit for that anyway. Is he tired?
No, that there's much to say in his favor, in Jeb Bush's favor, as well as Bobby Jindal. Now, because you know, I'm jumping around here, and we've had some great discussion here on ISIS. Tonight, this was a really interesting piece I found. It was from Fox News. It was February 12th posted. The article is ISIS on the doorstep. Fighters reportedly seize Iraqi town near base holding U.S. Marines. Can I just copy the link in the room?
Okay.
And then we only have about probably two or three more articles. But, you know, we're always so concerned about the welfare of our servicemen. You know, let me just note this here.
Okay, let's pop it up. Get up there. All right, hold on. Let me take us over there to the link. Well, come on up, Link. Behave yourself. Ah, there it goes. All right, gotcha.
Well, Lumosity is all these great exercises, all based on neuroscience, but they just feel like games.
Lumosity.com improves your brain's performance with the science of neuroplasticity. Start training now and discover what your brain can do.
We're beginning today with a very disturbing new report in the fight against ISIS. Reuters News Service is reporting right now from Iraq that Islamic State fighters have taken over most of a city in the western part of the country. This is significant not only because ISIS has clearly made gains there, but specifically because this spot is near a key U.S. airbase where U.S. Marines are right now training Iraqi troops. Frankly, we're having a hard time getting details from the Pentagon. Officials there do confirm that there is heavy fighting in the area, but that's about it. The city in question is in Anbar province, where ISIS has been battling opposition forces for many months now. And today, according to Reuters, ISIS is winning in a spot that's fraught with peril for American troops. It's newly developing. Let's bring in the retired Army Colonel Thomas Lynch, who's with us. He's a former special assistant to the Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman. He's now a fellow at the National Defense University. He's not here to speak on behalf of that university, by the way, or the Pentagon. This sounds very troublesome, sir. This spot that Reuters says ISIS has apparently overtaken, not far from a base where our soldiers are working.
Yeah, hi, Shep. Good to be with you again today. And yes, I think it's a report that bears watching, but I think it bears watching in context. And the context is this remains a fluid situation in Iraq. I think over the balance of the last couple, 3 weeks, reports that I've been tracking and seeing would suggest that ISIS has been put on its heels in many different places. Indeed, there's a report out 2 days ago about the number of airstrikes that have been launched against Iraqi forces that really have had a very debilitating effect on their vehicles, their sources of oil revenue, and several other locations. Having said that, they're still potent. And having been personally to that airbase, Al-Assad airbase, several times while I was still in uniform and working for senior leaders, you know, I can tell you that it's probably about 10 to 15 miles, if I recall correctly, away from where this town is. So it's not in direct threat of what ISIS would have as indirect fire weapons, but it bears watching, and I'm sure there will be some response to that that will be pretty significant in the next 24 to 48 hours.
We've seen the same reports you have, and it seems that you're on point there when you say that ISIS has been slowed or stopped in many areas, that much of what the coalition is doing seems to be working in recent days in ways that it hadn't, let's say, a month or two ago. That said, this situation specifically, this one location, seems to be significant. And if the Reuters reports are true, and we have no reason to doubt them, quite troublesome.
Well, again, I think it is worth watching. I think this has been air base put in context, Shep, that, you know, when you and I talked late last year, this was an air base at that time that was being identified as one that was, you know, surrounded, if you would, by the Indian forces. So it bears watching. I would say, though, another thing to keep in mind is the capacity and the capability of Iraqi forces and as well as American forces to do response and evacuations, if it should come to that, has increased. And so is our ability to put targeted airstrikes on locations in that town that may be of conspicuous danger moving forward.
I just know that, I know because they've told us, that they want to draw us into this fight. There's nothing ISIS wants more than American, quote, boots on the ground, unquote. And it, the thing when you read it that jumps to mind is, well, if they're heading toward the spot where our people are, the last thing we want to do is have them drawn in. Since it's the first thing ISIS wants, you just hope it doesn't come to that.
I would agree with you absolutely, Shep, and just in terms of tactics and how ISIS would draw us in at this point. I mean, it's one thing to take over a town that does not have defensive forces that are dug in place and battling you back. I think it's quite a significantly different thing to take on an air base like the one where we reportedly are working with Iraqis to train them, that you would have to get through some perimeter security and penetration. Now, again, it's not impossible. It bears watching very carefully. But again, if the ISIS forces are to mass to the number they would have to attack on the ground, and remember, they don't have air, they don't have many heavy weapons, that would make them conspicuously vulnerable to our airstrikes and attacks. And that's why I say, you know, watch to see what happens from here, because it's possible they could infiltrate from there and do some things, but I find it more than a little incredible that they would in the near term be able to mount a credible offensive capacity with the mass that wouldn't draw immediate airstrikes and difficulties for them on the ground.
That's great context and very valuable, Colonel Lynch. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Shep.
Really?
We're back.
Hi, Ash. Stephanie. Hi, Joe. Hi, Cobb. Is Glenn with us still? I'm not sure.
No, I don't think we got Glenn with us. I think he's on vacation.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Cobb.
He's there.
Right, now,
so,
Joe?
That being said, what do you guys think about that?
Well, my opinion, the Colonel is right, because attack an Air Force base or any kind of base, you got all that security out there with arms and heavy arms. So the only way for them to come in is infiltrate at night, not daytime, nighttime. And this is why you have 24/7 guards all the way around the area. And if they go into that Air Force base, or we call it the Air Force base, you guarantee we're going to have a lot of boots on the ground to push them back. I mean, this is it's working that way. Just give it time, and they're going to be on that base.
Out of the state of Oregon, the governor there has resigned.
I'd like to see how awful it was.
Democratic four-term governor has taken out.
Interesting resignation by Governor Kitzhaber, and that has an audio.
Oh, the Oregon
governor there has resigned. The Democratic four-term governor had faced mounting calls to resign over the scandal concerning his fiancée's consulting and policy work. Out of the state of Oregon, we've just received word that the governor there has resigned. The Democratic four-term governor had faced mounting calls to resign over the scandal concerning his fiancée's consulting and policy work. And this comes at the end of a bizarre week. According to the Oregonian, the governor had decided to resign by Tuesday, changed his mind by Wednesday. For more, let's go to CNN's Suzanne Malveaux. Suzanne, what exactly happened?
It has been an extraordinary week if you look at the turn of events here, because the governor had been talking to several state officials throughout the week, on the one hand giving them indications that he would in fact step down. He called his secretary of state from a conference, a meeting that was happening in Washington earlier in the week, to go back to Oregon. She would, of course, be the person to fill in for him if he resigned. And she was called. She said that he changed his mind, that in fact he talked about transition, but decided that he wasn't going to. And he emerged saying that, such that, from his driveway just a day before. Well, now we've got this official statement from the governor saying, in fact, he has decided that he will step aside. I'm going to read just the pertinent parts for you, Brooke, here. He says it's not in his nature to walk away from a job that I have undertaken. It is to stand and fight for the cause. He says, for this reason, I apologize to all those people who gave of their faith, time, energy, and resources to elect me to a fourth term last year. He goes on to say, he says, it's deeply troubling to me to realize that we have come to a place in the history of this great state of ours where a person can be charged, tried, convicted, and sentenced by the media with no due process and no independent verification of the allegations involved. But even more troubling, and on a very personal level, as someone who has given 35 years of public service to Oregon, that so many of my former allies in common cause have been willing to simply accept this judgment at its face value. Brooke, he's talking about all the Democrats who essentially have been calling for his resignation over the last couple of weeks, but certainly a growing, strong chorus has done so over the last couple of days. A little bit of the backstory here. This is regarding several things, but the main point here is an investigation around the First Lady, Sylvia Hayes, and her role. She has allegedly received some benefits, some funds from a group that she, an environmental group that she actually started. At the same time, she has acted as advisor to the governor regarding environmental policy. Mm-hmm. Clearly, if that is the case, that is a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm.
We're back, Tracy.
Well, what a shame. What a shame. What a shame. It's a terrible ending.
Yeah, but I'm confused. It was because of his office, but did he direct anything towards his wife? I don't understand why he's stepping down.
His fiance? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, this is a four-term governor. He must have arranged a deal. I mean, there's got to be more to it than just that.
Well, you know, reading right from the CNN Political News and Notes story highlights, directly quoting, John Kitzhaber resigns as governor of Oregon as a criminal investigation opens. A state agency served criminal subpoenas on Kitzhaber and his fiance. And let me see here. Let's see. Pardon me, sorry.
UFO.
Well, it's really a more of that's really the summation. Conflict of interest regarding financial payments to his fiance. I was hoping to get a few more details here. I think I might have just only kept some of the paragraphs in this article. But going further, the paragraphs I do have here, the resignation came as the Oregon Department of Administrative Services served criminal subpoenas on Kitzhaber and Hayes. The subpoenas seek emails, letters, and financial information concerning a wide range of activities, including state business, end quote. Now to return to the final article, and that is the Keystone Pipeline bill. That was we have, and I think we might actually have a video with that as well from February 12th. Can I just post that, the last one?
Yeah, grab it. Can post it up in a row.
Okay.
I was actually talking to you a second ago. I didn't realize I had you on mute. I was just talking away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, wait, no, it's too late now. Go on, we're moving on now. Too late. My phone popping. Not having my mic on.
What are you smoking, Joe?
The good stuff. Not at the moment, but give me some time. can only smoke one doing a show. If not, you get too high on what you're doing. You'd be like, what? Hi, what's my name? Frank. Who's Frank, man? Bob. Bud, what?
Frank,
no, I'm just kidding.
My dad. I'm there.
Oh, hi, Dad. Dad, I hope you're doing good. Smack your daughter around for me if you get a chance.
Nah,
I mean, like, snatch her by her hair and say, what the hell is wrong with you?
Nah, not my dad.
Anyway, moving ahead.
Moving ahead now.
Oh, wait, before we go, though, he's doing better, right? Because his stuff was hot recently.
Yeah.
Major shout out to Mr. Benetti and Mrs. Benetti, that beautiful couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 50
back
years.
Crazy,
God bless my mother. God bless my mother. She is doing what she can, but look, let's face it, guys. Dementia, it's a serious thing. I mean, really.
That it is.
No, it really is. You know, there's a lot of things out there about dementia, and what bothers me most about this is that the person knows they used to be someone, and they're not that person anymore. And they look at you, and they're like, when I speak to him, I'm like, Dad, like this. He goes... He looks at me with a blank stare of, yeah, like, I know, but he doesn't. And he's not sure who he used to be. It really bothers me. And, like, really sad. Anyway, that being said.
See, I'm learning lessons off Steph as she speaks, because my dad has it starting to have it a little here and there. Like the other day, he burned his food on the stove. You know, and then he forgot this.
Well,
so I'm learning everything you're saying, Steph. I'm learning off you what to do in a sense, because I never dealt with.
No, but you can't do anything. Like you have to actually act like you know. I bring my dogs to my parents' house every day, and I leave them there. And he has a reason to get up every morning because he feels. In his head, he's got to take care of them. And he gets up and he goes, oh, dogs are here. It's so crazy, but he's like, he goes, oh, I have to take care of the dogs. I have to give them water. I have to do that. So it's weird, but I'm helping him, you know, and... I'm helping the dogs, and...
You see, my dad, when I see him, and he's okay, I'll sit down with him, and he gives me a 300-question construction test. And I better not get one damn thing wrong, or I'm going to be there all night listening to his lecture. You know, he remembers. But the days he don't, he'll give me a wrong answer, then I would throw in the right answer. And he'll think about it, oh, yeah, you're right, you know, or something like this. So I can see where he's forgetting different things, you know.
I know, but you feel my pain, right? Because we're
I know where you're coming from.
Exactly. You know what? I love and respect my parents completely, and I'll do this. It's almost like that. What's that movie? Groundhog's Day. Every day we have the same conversation.
Every day, I gotta say this.
Every day he goes, oh, Alex is whatever, and I go, mm-hmm. And then he goes, oh, Amber is a whatever, like my dogs. And he talks about them every conversation.
That's a grandkids he wanted.
What I learned through growing up as a Native American, father and my mom used to say, listen. You listen to your elders because they have the wisdom. You are just a listener. When you get to the age, you'll be the messenger. Mm. And I listen to the elders talk. So if you're 99 years old and this guy's 50 years old, I go to the 99 and listen to what they say. The next step is to respect the children. This is how I was raised. The elders, the children, then I'll come down and see you. You know, that's the way we are. No, that's the way I am in the Native Americans. But the elders have the wisdom. You listen to them. They have the words, the wisdom. You know,
it's not even that, Cop. It's like live and learn. And if you've learned things, you're able to project them to people listening. I mean, here's why we do a radio, no, Joe?
Mm-hmm. What the hell's going on here? It is one of the reasons we have to do radio, though. Live and learn. Learn more, live, learn, teach. Teach, live, and learn.
We all learn from one another. But the people before us, the elders, they're the ones that went through the hard times compared to what we had, okay? They made it more easier for us to do more things. But when you sit down to an elder who's been, let's say my dad's 98, and you listen to what he talks about, then you sit back and you think, how the hell did I get here if you did all this? You know, you try to comprehend all the hard stuff that they went through. But yet we have it easy compared to what they did growing up and how they had to learn. Back then, they didn't have all the stuff that we had. They had to sew their own clothes. Today, you just go to Target and buy a pair of pants, okay? Their mother sewed everything together. When it came to courtship, they had to go meet the girl's parents and for dinner and all this and get approval for them to take that girl out.
My parents are together for 50 years.
Congratulations.
Yep. This year, August, comes 50 years. They're going to have a big party. And
Nice. You
don't really see that often, you know? And not even that. They're happily married, and they love each other one-on-one. For 50 years, I mean, it's like unheard of.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's unheard of.
When's the party? I'll be up to go.
All right.
Sounds great. He's in the area.
Wait, I'm going to invite Joe, Patrice, and Cobb. All come here.
Okay.
Oh, that would be lovely. Yeah. My parents were married 50 years as well and more, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful accomplishment.
I know, but it's more than that, Patrice.
It's a love of a lifetime.
People are together, but they're not really together. These guys have been together, I can't even, he can't live his life without her. And she can't live without caring for him. And the closeness is really stunning.
You're so united, but that does give a great richness to life. Mm-hmm. To one's life.
Anyway, guys.
Joe, we have our final article. Should I post it again?
Yeah, I'll grab it.
There is an audio.
Let me grab it right quick. Boom, boom, boom.
And Representative John Boehner, Speaker of the House, is featured in this video. Just a short clip.
Okay, let me drop this out of power right quick.
This week, the House will continue to focus on the people's priorities, passing another three bills that will increase the number of jobs available in America. We'll advance tax relief for small business that will help create some 200,000 new jobs. We're going to continue to keep our promise to the people by finishing our work on the Keystone Pipeline. You've all heard me say this before. We build pipelines all around America every single day. Keystone has been reviewed and approved numerous times. Even the President's own State Department will say that it creates 42,000 new jobs. But instead of listening to the people, the president is standing with a bunch of left-fringe extremists and anarchists. The president needs to listen to the American people and say, yes, let's build the Keystone Pipeline.
Small business. Everywhere you go, we know that's the lifeblood of job creation. The expensing is one of the greatest parts of where they look for investment. So three bipartisan bills. You're going to see Republicans and Democrats vote for them. But you know what else they have in common? Three veto threats by this president. I don't think the president should veto energy security throughout North America. I don't think the president should veto charitable giving across the country. And I do not think the president should veto small business growth. This is an opportunity with this new American Congress that the president can rethink what he's prioritizing.
So thanks so much for playing that tip. Now, this was from the page, the particular website being CNN.com. Keystone Pipeline bill heads to Obama, veto expected, by Deirdre Walsh, senior congressional producer, on the article text. And just quoting directly, President Barack Obama will have 10 days to issue a veto on a bill authorizing construction of the Keystone XL pipeline once it hits his desk. Now that the House has passed a final version 270 to 152, now let me see here. This is the negative, or at least for me personally negative. I probably shouldn't suggest my opinion, or note my opinion. Unfortunately, and here quoting the article, neither the House nor the Senate passed the proposal by a wide enough margin to override a presidential veto, end quote. Darn, they didn't have the two-thirds in both houses. I'm annoyed. In my heart, I really wanted this bill to pass. I think it would be wonderful for our nation's infrastructure, for developing business in those states, particularly Texas, also Louisiana, I believe, but definitely Texas. We needed this. We also needed this boost of the energy, energy resources.
Well, it really would be nice to have it. It'd be a lot of extra money to go around. But it's, you know, they were all whining about, I was going to create X amount of jobs, but they forget when the economy gets a boost, it creates more jobs. For some reason why, he's just anti this all the way around. It's just hard to believe how really hardcore against this he really is. But I guess he's got his reasons. But he can't expect Congress to help him out with anything if he's going to keep being a butt. That's as politely as I can say that, actually. Because he just seems to be just... I don't know. Obama just seems to be anti-American. It's just kind of a weird thing. Here, Steph, I put a link in the room for you.
Well, you know, when you think about the beautiful American environment, I know it's extremely important to preserve our heritage. But now I was speaking with a lovely lady, I believe it was yesterday even, that, or the day before, and she was mentioning that the people in Kentucky have so suffered from those EPA regulations of this summer. Jobs are the job market there has declined, so you know, there always has to be that level of pragmatism.
Yeah, I just wish I could see our governments and all just love us better, but I guess I'm going to have to wait for the peace, love, and light era another couple of decades. By the time it happens, I'll probably be too old to enjoy it. I'm sorry, that was wrong, but it does seem like that these days. It just seems like people prefer the disaster over peace. You know, I just don't understand why the planet isn't a more peaceful, more relaxed place than it is today. But I'm sure there's reasons, and I'm sure that we're going to blame them and they're going to blame us. It just gets tired to hear the same old, oh yeah, we blame them, they blamed us, okay, well, that gives them an excuse to blow the crap out of them. Nah, I don't think so. But apparently somebody does. But I know we just about out of time. I was like, damn, I'm hungry too. I am starving. As soon as we get off here, I'm going to go make a steak.
Well, you know, good night, everyone. First of all, let me please thank my great panelists, Cop, our favorite New Jersey policeman, Stephanie Benetti. And Joe Bonaldo, Stephanie Benetti and Joe Montaldo, those excellent co-hosts of News on the Flip Side and Flip Side Light. And of course, Joe Montaldo also hosts his Joe Montaldo show with Christina Knowles, the co-host of that particular program. But Stephanie Benetti and Joe Montaldo definitely reign as the United Public Radio's premier flagship program. And we just appreciate so much your being here tonight, Stephanie, Joe, Cobb, and Glenn. Glenn was here earlier. Glenn is a great scientist and entrepreneur from Oklahoma. And to our listeners, I hope you all had a wonderful, happy Valentine's Day weekend. Thank you for joining us. Have a great week as well.
Yeah, good show.
Happy Valentine's again, Stephanie. Have a happy Valentine's, Trees. And guys, remember, have some fun today. I'm going to pig out. Stephanie, get a chance, send me a title, and I'll rechange the other ones. But right now, I'm going to pig out. Trees, thanks for having us on, sweetie.
Love you guys.
make me smile with your heart and your looks. Your looks are laughable.
Yeah.